Nearly got a try on that left-hand side. What happened?
Oh, but I've gone up and over and bloody head over biscuit. It wasn't enough stability there for myself, but no, I was busting for a bit of meat this game. It didn't seem to work out.
Hello, cheers, and welcome to the Scrum of the Earth, the podcast that offers news, results, predictions, and maybe every now and then an occasional insight into the world of rugby union. I am David Lawrence. I'm an American rugby fan who follows rugby all over the globe. As most of you know by now, the teams I root for are, at the club level, the New England Free Jacks. Internationally, I root for my USA Eagles, and I root for Scotland. Down in Super Rugby, I root for the Highlanders, who came oh so close last season. That was a little painful. So the Scrum of the Earth is a weekly podcast with the occasional bonus ep thrown in, one of which you are listening to right now. Thank you so much for listening. I just recently hit 100 listens, and while that's obviously small fry, it made me smile quite a bit, that's for sure. Thank you very much. Please get in touch whenever you like. I am at Of Scrum, or you can use the Scrum of the Earth at gmail.com. I always love hearing from all of you. So the standard order of business for this pod is current updates, what's up with me, news, what's happening around the world of rugby union, things to chew on, what has me interested or annoyed this week. Then we'll do scores and results, and then some upcoming matches and predictions. I feel sure it's dumb luck, but so far, at least for the history of this pod, I've gotten things right. So take that for whatever it's worth. So current updates. Now, it's nothing to do with a rugby podcast at all, but my family and I got a chance to go camping last week, which was a very nice, lovely break. Of course, in very non-rustic fashion, I discovered that I could watch the gold medal game of the Olympic basketball between France and the U.S., and it was great. You know, I broke up with the NBA years ago, but I still love international ball, and this was a really cool matchup, really close. Obviously, I was pleased with the end result, but really fun to watch, and a cool break from what I usually watch, I guess. So news and things to chew on both are going to be on hold for this ep, because I want to get to our special guest as soon as possible. I am ecstatic to announce that two of the three creators of one of my favorite podcasts, Thistle Do Nicely, have agreed to come on to get give their reactions to the Lions series, what it might mean for Scottish rugby going forward, and much more. So if you haven't encountered their work yet, you can find a link to the show to their show in the show notes for this pod. Definitely check them out. They're really great. Well, I am incredibly excited to welcome some very special guests to the show to discuss the decider between the British and Irish Lions and the Springboks. They are Chris and Rory, two of the three hosts of Thistle Do Nicely, a podcast I have loved throughout their entire first season, which just recently came to an end. So Thistle Do Nicely, as described by their website, is Rory Havren Angus, Chris Cabercrusher Irvine, and Johnny the Highland Flinger Naismith, who are three lifelong friends and Scotsmen in New York who get together to talk about their homeland, the weird stuff that happens there, and to remind them why they are the way they are. I had to do a little bit of tweaking there to make that come out right, and I had to take a couple of guesses at a couple of those. How did that go?
No, you nailed it. You nailed it.
Absolutely nailed it. Yeah.
Well, 3 points. 3 points through the middle of the post, man. Absolutely.
Yeah.
So not Dan Bigger.
So, yeah, exactly. Yeah, Havren is made famous over here from the Proclaimers song 500 Miles, where he says, "I'm Havren, well, I know I'm gonna be the man who's Havren to you." And it's a famous Scottish word that just means to chat shit effectively.
Yeah,
or nonsense. That's a good point, Dave. Are we allowed to swear in your, are we censoring? The mums hate the swearing, as you know, so we're trying to cut it down.
I have kept mine totally clean. I can always change the label on it. I'm not trying to
just bleep out that last one and we'll be well behaved. Yeah. From now on. Okay.
I'm sure we could do it. I mean, we are talking about Scottish rugby, so it might, well rugby in general, so it might be problematic, but we'll try and be clean.
Well, to be fair, so I took a guess at Havren, and I thought it had to be a verb, but I came up with maybe it's just laughing a lot or something. But I did look it up, so I think that's a good one. Yeah.
There's a cover of 500 Miles that Real Big Fish does, I believe. And they say, "And when I haver," whatever the F that means.
Yeah.
You're not alone. you know.
I do wonder if, Chris, have you ever had any experience with cabers, or is that just what you came up with for the alliterative aspect?
It wasn't me that came up with it. I'm not going to lie. It was it was Rory being very lyrical. But yeah, I mean, I could make a crass sex joke right here. Yeah, I've had a lot of cabers in my time. You know what I mean?
We all know what you mean.
Yeah.
Okay.
I mean a penis.
I was nowhere near that. So guys, so before we actually get to any of your reactions to the game itself, so what were your levels of excitement going into this series? Were you, you know, dying for it to start, just chomping at the bit? Were you thinking, oh, this will be okay? Or were you
I'll go first then. So the Lions always means quite a lot to both Rory and I. I think more so now that we've moved over here. 4 years ago, we enjoyed the New Zealand series. We had a couple of, I think we watched the second New Zealand test together in a bar about 4 a.m. in the morning. Yeah. That was the one where, I don't know if you watched it then, David, but they won then, that one when Sonny Bill Williams got sent off in the first 25 minutes and they won the game.
For a pretty vicious card.
Yeah.
Not a pretty tackle.
And, you know, for the nice thing about the Lions is that unlike the Scottish national rugby team, you feel like they've always got the chance of winning. Scotland teams obviously got better over the last couple of years, but the Lions is always the cream of the crop. And South Africa always holds kind of a special place in my heart as well, because the first Lions series I watched was the 1997 series when they won 2-1. That's the famous one where Jerry Guscott scored a drop goal in the last minute to win the second test and win it for them.
Wow.
And I love South Africa as a country. I went there a few years ago with my wife. It's the best holiday I think I've ever been on.
Wow.
They're going through some tough times at the moment. But I can't recommend it enough. It's just a phenomenal country. And also this time round on the Scottish level of things, it's the most number of players we've had in a squad for 20 odd years, if not more.
28 or 32, I think I read. Is that right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, something like that. I mean, it's been pretty pitiful.
1989 return was the last time they were eight.
Right. So pretty pitiful the amount of players that we've had in that squad, and justifiably so. I would say we've not really deserved it, but now that our team has got better and better, and we knew that we had some really world-class players now, there was a definite level of excitement from a Scottish perspective. It's very difficult to say in kind of hindsight how we thought the team as a whole would do, but certainly from the Scottish perspective, we thought this is going to be fun.
I mean, so that night sitting watching them play New Zealand back in that bar at 4 a.m. locked in that Irish pub together, Chris and I had a bit of a, not an argument, you know, we had this like, let's call it an argument, because I was complaining about the lack of Scottish players in the team. And I was like, I just don't enjoy it as much. Like, when there's no Scottish players, there's not. Whereas Chris can get behind the Lions as a whole, as a team, as a country, and all that type of stuff. Personally, I couldn't as much as I still enjoy watching them, as much as I enjoyed that tour in particular. This year changed it entirely. Just leading up to it, after the Six Nations, after being so close, like just points away, minutes away from a Grand Slam. And then desperately, like we had, you know what, like 8, potentially 9, 10 possible players that could have been in the squad that we were all naming.
I think all those marginal calls that in the past we've thought, well, the Scottish guy could go, but also the Irish guy could go, and then the Irish guy goes, and like we got the rub of the green pretty much with every player we thought was going to go on the tour. I think the only player that we thought that maybe deserved it that didn't get it was Johnny Gray.
Richie as well. Yeah. I mean, he had a bad tournament, but he'd been overall like, and it's difficult because you watch the Six Nations and then it's like, okay, everybody gets based on this one tournament. We just had the World Cup as well. I don't know. It was a weird time rugby. I mean, that's why people were saying that England played badly in the Six Nations, because Saracens hadn't been playing and all that sort of stuff.
Yeah, exactly.
So then when the squad came out and we had like so many players in the squad, it was incredible. And that's when it just went, holy jeezy peeps, this might actually be an incredible tournament. This might be something we can properly get behind. And yeah, I mean, look, the tests didn't come out the way that we wanted to, but it was still so much more entertaining to watch.
Did you think Finn was going to make it to any of the 23-man squads?
So, I mean, certainly before he got injured, and I guess for your listeners that may not know, Finn Russell is on his day probably the best fly half slash standoff in world rugby, but he had a slight tear of his Achilles. And the debate, we're in a WhatsApp group with a bunch of English guys, basically, and one a couple of Welsh guys. They all think that Finn Russell is too much of a liability and can't be trusted. And to a certain extent, Rory and I think that as well.
I didn't think he was going to go on tour.
I thought he was going to go on tour, but I thought that he would be a bench option because he's not the type of guy that you kind of necessarily want the South African to play against South Africa to begin with. But it became clear as it went on that Bigger and Farrell were too similar and there was no plan B. And I think that's partly because Finn got injured. I did think maybe Marcus Smith might make the team ahead of him, but the fact that he was able to recover and come on, it kind of showed what we were missing, really. And, you know, there's a little bit of animosity about Finn Russell in Scotland still, because a couple of years ago he had that falling out with Gregor Townsend, and he basically took his ball and went home. And as far as we know,
Didn't he call his parents and go home?
Well, yeah. Apparently it was because Gregor Townsend said you can't have three beers in a night out, we never really got the full story of it. And the ironic thing is that Gregor Townsend is the closest, as a player, was as close to Finn Russell as we know. Like, he was the standoff in the 1997 Lions tour, and because he played with that sort of swashbuckling joie de vivre that we're just not used to. And so then when he left and Adam Hastings came in for the Scotland team, we thought, oh, we don't need him. You know, screw him. But it's clear that he's just on another level compared to...
Do you remember after the three beer thing, the next time England played, was it Genji who came out for the post-game interview and intentionally came out and gave the talk holding a beer just to be like, look, we're allowed to have beer.
I didn't clock that at the time, to be honest. Yeah, I mean, that's not surprising. Ellis Genji does that sort of crap all the time. But
But Finn's so fascinating. I've been horribly critical of him for a long, long time. And, like, you know, Chris and I talk about it a lot. And I just think he's unreliable. I think, you know, he'll do a beautiful crossfield kick and then immediately pass an interception. And you watch him when he's playing for Racing and he's incredible and he commands the games and all this type of thing. And I never understood why he couldn't be consistently incredible for Scotland.
Do you think that's changed? Does this performance give you any, you know, change your mind?
Rory can answer this first, but I have a theory on it as
So he played for the Lions. He came on to that game and he was just changed the entire tournament. Turned everybody around. All you hear in the punditry on Twitter and everything else is just people saying, like, Finn Russell just changed his tournament for me. I'm so glad that he came on. It was so much fun to watch him. He, you know, revived my love for rugby and for the Lions and everything else. And he did. Like, it was a whole different type of game. And I think his, you know, having the extra beer on a night out is also why he's so good at doing what he just did, is because I think Gatland was playing, maybe Townsend was saying it as well, who knows, because he was technically attacking coach, but maybe Gatland was saying, like, this is my tactics, this is how we're going to beat South Africa, and Finn Russell went, actually, this is what I'm going to do, and it was much, much better. My concern is that he's incredible for Racing, he just proved he was incredible for the Lions. It's not him that's the problem in Scotland, it's all the players around him. And I'm not, yeah. When I say all the players, I just mean like maybe a handful of players, because Scotland have got incredibly much, much better over the past few years. But my concern is that he just doesn't have other people that understand his way of playing.
Yeah, my theory of Finn is that his brain works at a higher level than a lot of the Scottish players have. And I would say also the Lions players as well. I mean, yeah. I would say one of the most refreshing things about this tournament is that Ali Price has kind of established himself as a world-class player now.
Yeah.
And the jury is, he was fantastic. He's come out of this whole tour, just his reputation is sky high. And for a long time, Rory and I thought that Price wasn't really that great. We do have independent
thoughts. I just want to make this clear that Chris and I do at times have
independent thoughts. You don't just form a consensus before you say anything?
Well, I mean, Rory and I and our group of friends have like this real soft spot and love for Greg Laidlaw. And even though if you compare the physicality and ability of Price and Laidlaw, Price is a much better athlete. But we just always felt that Laidlaw controlled the game better. But
yeah.
I got to say, Price was fantastic. And if Price can get to the level that Finn Russell is at, which, you know, he clearly just sees the game in a different way to everybody else. The only other player in the Scotland team I would put in the same bracket as Finn is Hogg. And Hogg admittedly didn't have a very good Lions tour. Mm. He was just...
Well, he's another one. Has your impression of him changed because of this series? I feel like he was fine. He just didn't have a chance to really do Hoggy things.
You know, the thing about Hogg is he's been Scotland's best player, I think, for what, the last decade, more or less. And yeah, he's never been known as the best under the high ball. And he was exploited a bit for that, but so was everybody else around him. And then Liam Williams came in the third test, and the supposed bomb diffuser, as his nickname is. Liam Williams had a shocker in the third test. He botched a couple. He really screwed up a clear try-scoring opportunity with Josh Adams, and he also got skinned for the Chelsea Colby try. So,
yeah,
you know.
It's funny, Hoggy exposed one of my surprise questions, which was going to be if it was Hoggy instead of Liam Williams, and with that two-on-one, is that a try?
I did say in our message that Hoggy would have made the tackle. I do think he's slightly better in defense when it comes to pure, like, completed tackles. But, I mean, who knows? You can't make those predictions. You got to give Colby
all the credit. Listening to the rugby podcast earlier today, South Africa basically had one chance in that game, and they took it. And it was a brilliant try. And it wasn't just Liam Williams. There was three or four guys that missed tackles. You know, I just saw the stat that
South Africa completed 55 passes total for that entire game. That seems incredibly low. Yeah, 55
I can believe that.
Passes.
I mean, look, we were the better team on the day, but...
Territory possession.
They play in a way... There was a stat I saw that I think the ball was in play for 26 minutes or something like that.
Yep.
In the third test, with
us thinking, I'd love to see what the stats are for the second test, because the second test was one of the worst games of rugby I've ever seen in my life. But
it was hugely entertaining, but it was a terrible game of rugby.
We tense
but ugly.
Yeah,
we just fell into their trap, really, and that's why they're world champions. And you know, you gotta they beat us. That's as simple as it.
Yeah.
So what were your expectations before the third test? Were you thinking, okay, we got this now? I feel like nobody felt very strongly. Did you have a pick? Did you feel confident?
I was telling people in the pub the Lions were easily going to win. On paper, they've got the better players in my head, but then the better individual players don't necessarily make the best team. And South Africa know how to win rugby games right now. And the Lions have a like less time to put things together. There was a lot of weird pairings that I didn't really think made a lot of sense. The third test, all we were talking about leading up to it is, as much as we were happy that Russell was there, he was on the bench, the concern was that he was going to come on with Murray. Murray. And Murray was just going to not work with him. We needed Russell to be on at the same time as Price. And then that's when they were going to be, electrifying. And I think the point was proven on Saturday. But yeah, I was confident going into the beginning of the tournament that we were going to win.
My thoughts were that it was almost kind of a shame that Russell came on so early, because I thought that if it was tight with 20 minutes to go and Russell came on as the X factor, then we would have a chance. But I think because he came on so early, the Springboks were obviously pretty rattled by him, certainly in the first half. I mean, they were terrible in the first half.
Yeah.
But then I think they kind of adjusted and he got quieter in the second half. And then Ali Price, again, he had a good game, but there was the 5 minutes before he got hauled off, like he suddenly went to crap and he knocked on, I think, a kick. And it was a very quick hook. Like, I noticed that the substitutes were very quick to go. It's in the front row of both teams. But then Ali Price, like, I sent a text message being like, Price needs to come off. And he came off like 20 seconds.
I do think that was unfair. I think that was just terrible timing. I have a feeling that you don't have a knock on and then it's like, oh, somebody's got a knock on.
No. He'd done a couple things at that point. He'd started to kind of lose it a bit. But I think if, say, we'd been 3 points down with 20 minutes to go and Russell came on, I would have fancied our chances. And that's not taking it away from him, because I thought he was the best player on the pitch. I thought he was phenomenal. And it was just so good. Like, again, just to go back to this WhatsApp group that we're in with English guys and Welsh guys, and they were slagging Russell off the whole time. They're like, oh, I want to see Farrell. Why isn't Farrell in the team? It's like, because Farrell doesn't offer what Russell does. Farrell's been terrible for about a year for club and country. He was terrible for England. And
I've instinctually disliked him since I sort of first counted him. It's obvious that he's really good, but the last year, maybe not so much. And I admit, a little schadenfreude for me.
there's a theory with Farrell that he's always prided himself in his defense, and he got a red card, I think, for a high tackle, and he's had to change his technique, and that's kind of drained his confidence.
Farrell, a red card for a high tackle? Come on.
I agree. But, I think he's been a bit of an all-rounder. Like, he was a decent kicker. He was obviously decent in attack. He's very good in defense up until, like, the various infringements that, he would give away penalties all the time. He was doing it all the time. But because he was an all-rounder, everybody just kind of assumed he was amazing at everything. And then the moment you look at the numbers, I remember, I was in a pub with, I think, you, Chris, and a few other people, and I was like, no, look at the stats. He's maybe seventh in the world at conversions. Like his numbers are decent, but not the best. Whereas everybody's like, he's the best in the world. He's the best kicker in the world, obviously. And I think he's just always got this inflated.
It's because he's
an inflated perception of him.
It's because Eddie Jones,
but might
he's
think
English.
He's the best. It's weird. It's funny too, because I have a friend who is in the U.S. Hall of Fame. She actually played in the first two Women's World Cups and scored tries in them. And
yes, your secret friend. I heard you talking about her in one of your episodes.
Yes, indeed. She's one of the only people who's given me feedback, and she said, it's good. I like that it's short. So.
That's a good point. That's the problem. When you've got the two of us on, all we're going to do is talk, especially when we're talking about rugby. So this is going to be a seven-hour episode.
Yeah, this is either going to make or break you with her, I guess.
Well, I was surprised to learn, even as a U.S. player, that the English players just engender this negative feeling. And I was asking her who she was rooting for in this series, and she said, what are you talking about? The Springboks. And I said, oh, yeah, I don't know. I wasn't sure who to go for. And she said, there are crumpets on that team. So I was like, okay, so that rules them out. Okay, good to know.
Yeah, that is very fair enough.
So a couple more questions I've got here too. So this is actually my first experience with the Lions Tour. And so I pretty much enjoyed it from start to finish. There seems like there was a lot of, oh, everyone's so negative about it. But I just ducked right under that and just kept going. Mm. But the phrase I keep hearing everywhere, the outdated concept. Everyone say, oh, the Lions is an outdated concept. It sounds like you guys are all in and do not think that.
Yeah.
Why are people bandying about that phrase everywhere?
It comes around every 4 years, that question.
Seems
it. Because it is a throwback. This year has been... it's been a disappointing tour, and that's because of COVID. That's the only reason. You know, normally you would send this army of British fans in the red jerseys. They would go and do community outreach. The players would go into the townships and, you know, do all that, do rugby clinics, that old stuff. The economy is obviously taking a massive hit there. Normally they would go and just drink Cape Town dry. And, you know, the tour, usually they can go and do whatever they want, but they've all been holed up in, you know, hotels, not being able to do anything. And so that is taking a hit. But that means, I think, that it's never going to go away, because as far as the English, Welsh, Irish and Scottish players see it, they see the Lions as the absolute epitome. They see it as bigger than the World Cup. Winning a Lions Test Series is so rare. I think in Rory and my lifetime of well, certainly of us watching it, we won a South African series, won an Australian series. So we won two series. Rory and I are both 35, and I think we've won since we started watching rugby, since we were about 10. So in like 25 to 26 years, we've won two series. Mm-hmm. It's incredibly difficult to do. You know, they're going to want to go back to South Africa in 12 years time when there's fans and prove a point.
Yeah.
Australia is seen as kind of the easiest of the three right now, but it always ends up kind of weirdly cyclical that whoever they end up playing are the World Cup champions. It's bizarre.
Yeah.
Like South Africa were crap 2 years ago and then they won the World Cup and now all of a sudden they're seen as the team to beat. Australia will get their act together. And then of course New Zealand is the one after that. It's not going to go away. It's obviously, it's a massive cash cow as well. So yeah, it's not, it's just that this series,
American, it's so completely different than anything. There's just no American sports equivalent. I can't even imagine how you could manufacture one. So outdated seems the opposite to me. I'm like, hey, this is brilliant.
Yeah. I think that's just all the kind of politics stuff and people trying to, you know, it's almost like clickbait now. People are talking about that. Like the people that actually follow it, that play in it, that are properly involved in it, I do think truly still love it and truly support it and don't think it's outdated at all. There's still some nonsense. Like everybody becomes, as much as you support the team on the day, all the build up and all the moment the game is finished, all it is about your own country, your own players, and you know, whichever of your players played the best, and blaming the our WhatsApp group, the moment the England game lost, I was like, well, Curry lost that for us. And it's obviously there's no way it was going to be a Scottish player that lost it for us. It was always going to be an English player. I still stand by it though.
Yeah. So I got one last pretty obvious one for you. It's a sort of a two-parter. So who is your player of the series and who is your Scottish player of the series? They might be the same, but not necessarily.
Oh, good question. Rory, any thoughts?
Yeah, I mean, the wisdom everybody's saying player of the tournament is... we've got 10 minutes, by the way. I'm not going to upgrade, but everybody's saying that the wisdom is Itoje. He's a player of the tournament, and I find it really hard to argue with that. I think Henshaw is one of the other names that I've seen bandied around.
I had not heard that.
Yeah, I can kind of see that. Itoje was just there constantly. There was a lot of talk about him being captain before it started. I've not seen him be as good as he was in this tournament, and I was hugely impressed by him. And I can't think of anybody else who really stepped up the only person I would say that could, and this might sound silly, but I think the only person that could really compete would be Ali Price. So he would be definitely my Scottish player of the tournament, because I just was so impressed with him. Conor Murray became my villain of the tour just because there was no need for him to be.
On one hand, he must feel so jerked around. Your captain, by the way, you're not starting. It was bizarre. I'm sure he's like throwing his hands up in the air. At the same time, I just thought he was the weaker choice.
I think Conor Murray didn't have a very good Six Nations, which made him a bit of a strange choice. But I'd agree with Rory there. I think the best Scottish player was Ali Price. I'd even say that he was potentially the best player of the tour. The only other name I would probably throw in there would maybe be Courtney Laws. I thought he was terrific, especially because I think the pre-test selection consensus choice to play six was Tag Byrne. Who'd had a terrific Six Nations, and everyone was like, well, why is Laws in there? And Laws was fantastic. The irony being, of course, that he then gave up the decisive penalty that lost us the game.
Did you watch Squidge's breakdown of the second test where Dan Bigger was literally screaming at him?
That was a video I sent, Irv. I don't know if you watched it.
Oh, was it? It was too long. I couldn't be bothered watching.
It is condemning.
I think Itoji was very good. I don't know, man. I don't think too many people put their hand up. It's certainly in the warm-up games, you know, Doohan and Josh Adams were great, but then it's all about the tests, really, and none of the backs really did it.
The window is so teeny. You've got, you know, whatever it is, like a 40-man squad, then you've got to make the 23, and then you actually have to get on there, and then there's only three tests, and it's every 4 years. Unbelievable, the pressure they must feel, and the pride that must go along with it, too. You saw it on Alan Wynne Jones' face after the game. I loved his bit about, guess what? I'm going to be pretty emotional about this. I thought that was pretty great.
And the margins are so small between all the players. You know, there's a 50-50 between almost every position. And one of the, I don't think we could come in here and not talk about Hamish Watson for a couple of minutes, because
I did skip that. Was he too small for this series, as Stephen Jones said?
That's a trigger. That's a trigger argument for us, David. All right,
The numbers that I got into, the email that I sent Chris, just being like, I know I need to let this go, but I just want to give you the stats, the BMI of every player in the entire world and why it makes sense.
When you look at bone density.
Yes.
The thing about Hamish is that he was the player of the tournament for the Six Nations.
He was.
He admittedly did not have a good first test, and he gave away that penalty. He probably should have been yellow carded for it. And then he just didn't get a sniff. And we both thought that Tom Curry was horrific on the third test and gave away a hell of a lot of penalties. And I don't really see why people like Tom Curry, to be honest. And that, I'll take that to my grave. That will be the hill that I die on. I think Hamish Watson should have at least been on the bench for the second and third test. And, you know, I actually do think this sets us up quite nicely for the Six Nations, because I think quite a few of the Scottish players are going to have a bit of a chip on their shoulder to prove people that, you know, they were overlooked a bit. Even though we had eight people in the squad, I think, you know, some of us got hard done by there.
You know what's going to be great is when we beat South Africa in the autumn test.
Yeah.
That's what's going to happen. It's going to be incredible.
And Doohan scoring lots of tries for a change, too.
Yes. Well, he just needs the ball. Bigger wouldn't pass the ball. So then how's Doohan going to be able to run?
Yeah. I can't wait to see how long the camera stays on his face during the South African national anthem this time.
Yeah, that was pretty outrageous. Poor guy. I mean, that must be a tough tournament for him. Like,
I mean, look, if you'd also told us that Doohan was going to be one of the two Scottish players to play in all three tests 12 months ago, him and Ali Price, Rory and I would have told you that you're an idiot. So
yeah, it
shows what we know, really.
So in the last year or so, I've noticed the phrasing, and I see a lot. It's like South African born Scottish player, Doohan Vandermeer, blah, blah, blah. They always mention South African Scottish player.
how does that play as a Scottish fan? Are you guys like shut up about that? You know, he's a Scottish player. That's all there is to it. A Scottish player.
We don't really care. Just give us your best players.
But it's the same. Like if you look at, I think, isn't Vinopola like? Didn't he play for Wales? And he's like Samoan born or something.
Yeah.
You know, this is, it's just nonsense. It's just, he has a very South African name. And he just, I think it was just another way of kind of getting the knife in. Maybe we have a persecution complex, but I think a lot of people like to kind of take digs at Scotland.
Scotland has a long history of scouring the globe for talent and other I mean, come on, if you look at the All Blacks, half of their team comes from Samoa and Tonga. So
for sure,
you know. It's
done all over the world.
We play the rules as they're done. And look, if South Africa doesn't want Doohan, we're more than happy to have him because he's a try-scoring machine. And, you know, I hope he scores tries for a long time for us.
Yeah.
Last thing of all, did you, either of you care about the Rassi stuff, the Rassi gate, you know, any of the Rassi nonsense?
I really like your reference.
I'm ready to let it go.
I really liked your reference to him being the Belichick of rugby. I think that's a good comparison.
He's like, technically, there's no rule against it yet.
Yes.
I mean, the video rant was hilarious, but the going on with the water was like, listen, man, just say you're the head coach and stop dicking around here, okay? We all know what you're doing. You know, just don't be an asshole about it. You know, rugby is a game of honor mostly, and there's no place for this kind of tomfoolery, I suppose.
Yeah.
And look, I hate the way South Africa play rugby. I think it's really cynical. I think it's boring. I would much rather watch the Japanese team play.
Yeah.
You know, for example, they're just much more entertaining. That's rugby for me. And ultimately, I guess I'll look back on this tour as watching South Africa play really cynical, boring rugby, but it's won them a series.
Yep.
Yeah. But, and that's the thing. It's like boring on the pitch, but fascinating off the pitch. And that's just really, really
I feel like if I was on the Springboks, I'd be thinking, this guy will do anything for us. I feel like that's his best power is the way his players just know that he will do absolutely anything. I heard somebody say, well, Warren Gatley could do that, but I don't know if he's fit enough to actually be the water guy. So
he likes his little booth watching people from above. Yeah. We're about to get kicked off, by the way. We've got a minute left.
Okay, well then I'll hit my ending here. Thank you guys so much. It really has been great. So to all you listening out there, please be sure to check out Thistle Do Nicely wherever you get your podcasts. They are in a brief hiatus right now. So you have some a perfect amount of time to catch up with all the great content they've put out this whole year. There's even an episode dedicated to rugby. I highly recommend it. Guys, thank you so much. It's been awesome.
Talk oh, thank you.
Oh, no, thank you. This was awesome. Thanks for having us on. Enjoy.
Talk to you soon, guys.
All right. Cheers, David. Thank you.
Well, that about does it. I have to say, it was a real joy to be able to catch up with fellow rugby fans and fellow Potters whose work I very much enjoy. It was just a huge, unexpected treat to be able to connect with them. So, Rory and Chris, thanks so much again for taking the time to do this. Again, the name of the podcast is Thistle Do Nicely. You can find the link in my show notes. And guys, if you ever need someone to come on your pod to discuss weird Americanisms, I'm your dude. So, that brings us to the end. Again, please be sure to follow me on Twitter at @ofscrum. You can always email me at thescrumoftheearth@gmail.com. If you'd like to help me spread the pod to other fans, you can help by sharing and, more importantly, leaving positive reviews wherever you get your podcasts. If you leave me a 5-star review and I'm able to locate it, I will be more than happy to read it out no matter what it says within family rating parameters. So, thanks to you. Thanks to my guests. Cheers. Talk soon. Thanks again. Be well.